Welcome to the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Keniston, and this is episode 18. Welcome to the latest West Harlem Way podcast. This podcast is probably slightly shorter than normal ones, but I've been away this weekend running a recce run in the Lake District with my friend Dave Troman. And so, in fact, I used the opportunity to interview Dave, so that's the main part of this podcast this week. And it was quite interesting because I got down there on Saturday evening, and we had a little bit of time to have something to eat and then do part of the podcast before the Champions League football between Chelsea and Bayern Munich. That, as you probably may well know, went to extra time and then penalties. So we only did another little part before we went to bed. We did the third part on the run as we came out of Coniston. And then we did the final part of it once we got back to Keswick and before I came back up to Paisley. So that lasts about 37 minutes, but it's broken into four parts. So that's quite fun as well. But it was interesting to interview Dave. I've ran a lot with Dave over the last few months. This is our third recce run together. And Dave's someone who I think has a lot of good things to say. He thinks a lot about his training, his running. He's got a lot of experience, not just from ultra running, but from mountain marathons and orienteering and hill races. So I asked Dave a bit about his running, but also quite a bit about his thoughts on four main areas: his training, the gear he uses, his nutrition, and his race strategy. So I hope you'll find that really helpful, and it was quite interesting for me just to interview Dave and get some of his thoughts on our podcast. And then before that, though, I've got an interview. I read out a favourite blog post of the week, and this week I did one from Vicky Hart's blog, and she's getting ready to run the Edinburgh Marathon this Sunday. So she just gave some thoughts there, so I've read that one out. And we do wish Vicky a great run and anyone else running the Edinburgh Marathon. Just thought I'd mention as well, congratulations to all those who ran the Catering Trail. We interviewed Ian a couple of weeks ago as the build-up, and he was talking about preparing for that. And it's good to see that Ian finished in, got the results here, in 12 hours 25. So well done, Ian. And maybe he might write it up on his blog that we can read about it and see what it was like. It sounds though, it was a great race. As I was driving down, Caroline was giving me updates on Neil Gibson and his run, and he finished 11th in 9 hours 27. I know he was aiming to get under 9:30, so well done to him. But it looks as though the top end of the race was pretty competitive. Matt Williamson won in 8:09. Followed by Richie Cunningham in 8:14, and then Gareth Mays in 8:19. And the leading lady was Fiona Ross, who finished in 9:40, and then Judith Dobson in 10:30, and the third female was Anne Noble in 10:55. And the one which I'm always interested to see in as well is the vets. First vet was Craig Stewart in 8:46, and the most important one is the super vets, the male super vets, and that was won by Donald Sanderman in 11 hours 10. So well done to everybody. I just got the results here on my screen. I scrolled down and there was 54 people finished, and right at the end there was Ray McCurdy running his 101st ultra. So well done to Ray and everybody else who ran that race and finished. Congratulations to Karen, who organised the race, and for a team of volunteers who were involved. So that is the final race in the sums before the West Harlem Way race, which is now getting very close. And all those that have us preparing for that, then we wish you well. The numbers are dropping down. I think we're down to about 202, 203 now. There's a couple more emails came in today saying people have had to drop out. So we're getting closer to that 200 number that we sort of really need, in a sense, for the race. And it'd be interesting. I hope most of those can actually get to the start line fit and healthy to be able to enjoy this great race. So thanks for listening in to this latest podcast. As I say, the next voice, we'll hear my voice again, but it will be reading out Vicky's blog. and then we've got the interview with Dave Troman. And as I say, this one is slightly shorter, but I thought I'd get it out anyway, so before for the weekend. Okay, so thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. Favourite blog post of the week is by Vicky Hart on Thursday the 17th of May 2012. Vicky has run a number of ultras and a couple of 24-hour track races, and had a lovely baby girl, Annabelle, last October, and is slowly getting back and doing very well, getting back into her running. And this is just a post that she put on her blog, which is Vicky's running blog. blogspot.co.uk, and this one's entitled Losing Weight and Losing Sleep, I Know Which I Like Better. Well, it's been a pretty hairy run into this marathon. The training has not gone exactly to plan. My final 20 miler got bumped in favour of making my LO's christening cake. 9 hours of work in total. Good job it tasted good after all that work. Lol. I then had to cram in what turned out to be a hilly 15 miler the morning of the christening. I really wasn't up for it, but my lovely friend SG had felt sorry for me, I think, after seeing one of my tweets on the Saturday, and offered to keep me company for the run on Sunday. So I was roped in whether I wanted to go or not. And believe me when I say had it not been for SG, I wouldn't have run at all that weekend. My mojo and my energy had definitely left the building. I've managed a few short runs, including the 5K race and then a 5-mile race. My times for both, see previous blog posts for the 5km story, were okay. Reasonable enough performances considering. I really don't feel particularly good about the way my running is going at the moment. I know you get good days and bad days, but due to the constant lack of sleep at the moment, the balance is definitely tipped in favour of bad runs. It's all very classic pre-marathon taperitis type stuff without the niggles, just pure exhaustion. I don't want to jinx it, but I haven't had any proper sore bits for a few weeks, so I'm missing out on that part of taperitis, brackets, thank God. So it really is just an energy thing. It's times like these when I wish energy, caffeine type drinks didn't make me want to throw up just at the smell of them. Haha. There has been some serious sleep deprivation recently, so much so that I was considering not going to Edinburgh. It was all just seeming far too much, and I just wanted to take away the stress and pressure of such a big undertaking when I am feeling so worn out. But I put those thoughts aside, and with a little help from my OH, I should make it to the start line. I won't be as fresh as I like, far from it. But I will, touch wood, be there at London Road, ready to start next Sunday. Scary. After a few days in the Lake District, I returned to have a pretty good run yesterday. 10 miles at PMP, minus 30 seconds per mile. I was supposed to be just PMP, but clearly I run best in mid-afternoon, post-chocolate. It's a shame I can't get them to shift the start of the marathon to 2 p.m. I'm planning on a slow 4-mile tomorrow, a slow 10-mile on Sunday, and 2 or 3 slow 4-milers next week. The hard bit is done. I just need to get to next weekend in one piece with hopefully no bugs. I still haven't decided on what is realistically my best option for my marathon pace. My training has been all over the place, with good runs, okay runs, and utterly shambolic runs. I still don't have the confidence to just say X minute miling will be my pace. I will definitely be going for at least 9-minute miling, which would be a PB, but we'll have to just wait and see. You never know what the day will bring with weather, etc. So whatever happens, happens. I just hope it's a good run. Another up and down blog, I know. Much like a normal day for me at the moment. Looking forward to life settling down a bit. Important to finish on a positive, so how about this one? When I was pregnant, I ballooned in weight, literally, by 4.5 stone. It's scary to say it. It was even scarier to do it. not that it was within my control. Drum roll, please. I have now lost 4 stone of that weight. Whoa, only 0.5 stone to go. I had hoped to be back at pre-baby weight for the marathon, but 4 stone is not too shabby in 7 months, eh? So thank you very much, Vicky, and we wish you all the best for the Edinburgh Marathon this Sunday. We'll be looking forward to reading your blog afterwards and to see how you got on, and anyone else who is running the Edinburgh Marathon this weekend. So well done, and thanks for your post this week. Well, good evening. Today I'm in Keswick and come down for our third recce run for the Lakeland 100. I'm staying with Dave Trowman, and so I thought it would be a good opportunity to interview Dave and ask some questions about his running. We've got about 15 minutes before the Champions League final starts, so we might do this part one, and then we'll do the second part after the football. So thanks for your hospitality, Dave, and looking after us. Maybe you could just start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your running before you got into ultra running.
Hello, everyone. Originally, my running, I come from an orienteering background, which I got into when I wasn't able to play football through injury. And my stepfather said, did I fancy joining him on some orienteering outings, which I did, and got hooked, and then spent the next 20 years racing fairly competitively at orienteering. That included then starting to get into doing a few of the mountain marathons, the two-day events. And then finally, a friend of mine in Keswick who was training for the West Island Way invited me along for a training run on the route. So this would have been in February 2009. I'd never been on the route before. Went up to Scotland with him, and we ran from Balmerhaugh to Tyndrum, and I just absolutely loved it. Mm. It was just one of those. It was a fantastic February day. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, crystal blue sky. It was absolutely, it was just a dream. And basically, I finished that run, drove back to Keswick, and sent off an entry for the Highland Fling there and then. Mm. And from then on, that kind of just fell in love with the route, really. So I think it. I would say that I didn't fall in love with ultra running. I fell in love with the West Island Way more than anything. Yeah.
Okay, I think you've been fairly modest there, because your orienteering, that was very high standard, wasn't it? Maybe tell us just a little bit more about your the level you got to with your orienteering.
I got reasonably good fairly quickly. Got into the sort of West Midlands junior squad, and eventually got selected for the British junior squad. Mm. Raced internationally as a junior for a few years, and then fortunate enough to get into the full British squad. I retired from that probably about 1995, something like that. And then obviously living here in Keswick, I got more and more into fell racing. Mm. And fell racing very much as towards distance work. If you said that kind of officially a short fell race is still up to kind of the best part of an hour, and a medium fell race is nearly 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if when you start doing the long races, you can be out for many, many hours. So I think that kind of helps me now, having done that background.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the ultra then. So 2010, was it? Was that the first fling? Yeah. And you did the fling and the West Highland Way?
2009 was 2009. The first fling.
Okay.
Yeah, 2009 was my first fling, which I started very, very conservatively, because I really, really wanted to enjoy the day. Mm. And I did have a lovely, lovely day. I ran it in 10 hours and 1 minute or something like that. I was in bits at the finish. But that, you know, very quickly, as everybody knows, you soon forget about the bad times and you start thinking and planning ahead. And basically within like 2 days of that, I decided that I wanted to do the full West Island Way race the following year. Mm. So pretty much I would say from finishing the Fling 1 year, I thought about nothing else but the West Highland Way for like a year and a half.
And so that 2010 race then, tell us a bit about that. You that was the first time you'd done the race. Tell us a bit about, did you have a target in mind, time-wise, and how did it go?
I think I was a little bit like yourself, John, that I'd set myself a number of targets, and the first one was obviously to finish it, and but I said I knew, barring disaster, and I wanted to get under 24 hours, certainly, but I'd also, maybe looking at your splits, I thought, well, this looks doable. I thought about 20 hours. If I had pretty much the race of my life, I thought I could get under 20 hours. But again, there's a certain naivety that comes when you haven't done one of these things before. And I probably didn't factor in how much I'd need to stop and just recover and regroup a little bit along the route. I think my running times during the race were all kind of sub 20 hour splits, but I hadn't factored in how much I'd need to stop.
Yeah. And what time did you finish that?
I did 20:20, which I was absolutely, I was so made up, I was in floods of tears at the finish. As I finished, my dad, who was part of my support crew, once I'd finished getting weighed, he kind of thrust the mobile phone into my face and said, "It's Tracy, my wife, on the phone." And I went round the corner of the leisure centre to talk to her, and I was in bits on the phone, and it was fantastic. Yeah. I absolutely loved it. But yeah, for those that don't know me, I'm very much like John in the fact that I love spreadsheets. Spreadsheets are the greatest invention of mankind, perhaps only outdone by the wheel. And so I was carrying spreadsheets for different times and so on. But just being in touch with that time all the way through, I kind of fed off that, and I think that really helped me. I was quite happy not to do that 20 hours, and I think there's unfinished business, but I definitely fed off the fact that I was close to it a lot of the time. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. And then last year, 2011, you came back, you were going to try and enter the West Highland Way again, and we became good friends by then, and we were in touch. And just before the Fling, you had a little bit of a disaster, which meant that you couldn't actually do the race, could you?
Yeah, I've for probably 4 or 5 years, I'd been carrying an injury, which myself and various physios, we assumed it was tendonitis. It turned out that it wasn't tendonitis; it was a bit more serious than that. But I think it was probably 4 or 5 weeks before the Fling, I was actually playing basketball at the time, and something happened in my heel, and I thought, oh, tweaks a bit, we'll just rest up and be fine. But it was obviously a lot more serious than that. It turns out that a piece of bone was actually growing into my tendon and started to fray it, so it was quite serious. And I, like everybody in the same situation, I went through, well, I'll rest up for a few weeks, then I'll just jog the Fling really slowly, and then I'll be okay after that. And then it got near to the Fling, and I had to pull out of the Fling. And then it basically got to the point when I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to do the West Highland Way, which was heartbreaking. I knew I was in good shape, hopefully to run sub 20, but you know, we'll never know. And then eventually I had various diagnoses done and sorted out, and I had an operation last summer, and started running again in January. And here we are.
Now, I'm sure some of you will have read Dave's blog. You can tell us a bit about that as well, because you set up the blog really to record your recovery, didn't you? So you can tell us a bit about that. And then you did the Fling a few weeks ago. Maybe tell us what your plans are for this year. Obviously, you've done the Fling, and what's the other main race?
We did the Fling, which was fantastic, just to get back on the route. I did a bit of training on the route in the winter, which was just great to be there again. And I knew, I was very confident going into the Fling. I knew I was running. I trained well since I got back running again, and I ran a new PB in the Fling. So I ran 9:18, so it was a PB by 40 minutes, so I was obviously very pleased with that. But this year, My main aim, same as yourself, John, is that we're hoping to have a good day out come the end of July on the Lakeland 100 route, which is, I think, I'd already planned to do the Lakeland 100 this year rather than the West Highland Way, even if I'd have run the West Highland Way last year, because I wanted to do my local ultra while I was still young enough to sort of do a decent job. But it's also kind of given me a completely different focus, because even though I didn't run the race last year, it was still my focus all the way through the winter, because at that point I was going to be running it. So I thought psychologically I needed a different focus for a year. I'm really, really looking forward to the Lakeland 100 now. It's a very different race, but I've heard such good sort of comments about what the atmosphere is like and the support and the way it's organised and so on, that I think it's going to be a really special day. Can't wait.
Have you got any sort of time in mind for that one? What would be your gold medal time for that Lakeland race?
This is going out to the world. I think getting sub 28 will be a very good run, particularly after last year, the trials and tribulations of, you know, months in plaster and all the rest of it. So sub 28 would be fantastic. If I had, you know, one of those real red letter days, then, you know, maybe getting under 27, something like that. But I am bothered about what time I do, and because I'm competitive and I want to do the best that I can. But, you know, I think as you get older, I've kind of just enjoy being there. I think if I had a not very good run, once that had passed, I would still look back and say, yeah, that was a good day out. I think that's, if you'd asked me that same question 10 years ago, I wouldn't have given that answer. But I think, you know, particularly after last year, I think that makes a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I would say, having ran with you for two runs already, I think you're in great shape, and certainly I'm looking forward to seeing what you'll do on the day, as I'm looking forward to seeing what I can do as well. I thought it'd be really helpful, Dave, because we've spent quite a bit of time together over the recce runs, and we chat a lot about various things. And there's four main areas which I think you've got a lot to share with us, and particularly with those doing ultra races, from your, I think, vast experience, not just of ultra running, but mountain marathons and other things you've done. So, and those four areas are thinking about your training and the way you approach your training, thinking about kit. I know you're very keen on sort of getting the right kit and thinking that through. Also nutrition, I think that's something that we all have to try and deal with and work through. And then finally, sort of strategy on the day. So we'll take one at a time. So maybe you could start with just talking a little bit about your training, because I know we've talked a lot about this, and I think you've got some great, great ideas about how you set out a training program and some key elements that you do in your training.
Well, when I did the West Highland Way in 2010, I sat down probably in about November 2009 and planned out how I was going to do my training. Not to the degree when I said on this particular day I'm going to be doing that session, but I decided that obviously the fling was going to be an important element as part of that training. And then I wanted to have, I needed to learn the route as well, which was, I think that's for anybody doing it. If you don't know the route, you're adding significant lengths of time to what you're going to do on the day. Not necessarily because you're going to get lost, but simply because you need to know how to sort of let out your energy levels. And you know that there are going to be times when you've got something tough coming up that you might need to just pull things back a little bit so that you can cope with those more difficult bits. So what I tried to do, I think pretty much got the idea for myself, John, that was to have sort of once a month-ish to get up on the route and have a sort of 30, 35 mile day out on the route, not trying to necessarily do fast times or anything like that, just to be on the route, learn it, maybe get some ideas about what sort of times you're expected to get to various checkpoints and so on, which I think is important. Which has got a big thing to do with the nutrition, which maybe we'll talk about in a while. And I think also kind of trying out your various bits of kit. Don't do anything new on the race day. Don't wear a single piece of kit on race day that you haven't worn before. That's my kind of one of my mantras. But what I do, I work on a 3-week cycle of training. So I have an easy week, a medium week, and a hard week. An easy week will just be 4 training sessions, a medium week is 5, and a hard week is 6. And I have this underlying principle to all my training that you only get fitter when you're resting. You don't get fitter while you're actually running. And I look back at some of my old training diaries from when I was a lot younger, and I was doing really hard sessions all of the time, and maybe I could cope with it then, but I know now that there's no way I can. You know, my body would break down now. So those rest periods are really, really important. And I also restrict, in my easy weeks, I restrict my longest run to 2 hours. So by the time I've done that, I'm then able to sort of go on and chomping at the bit, ready to go into a medium week or a hard week. Mm. And early on in the year, I tend to have an easy week before and after my really, really long runs, a 35 miler. I'll sort of back to back it with easy weeks. Mm. And then as the season progresses, as we were talking about progressive overload of training earlier tonight, I will maybe have a medium week followed by backing onto the hard run, and then a nice easy week thereafter. Mm. But I can shuffle those weeks around as things, you know, if a hard week at work, I might not be able to do as much, or if you've got a cold or whatever, you can shuffle those weeks around. Mm. But I would never do 2 hard weeks back to back. I would always follow a hard week, maybe by a medium or an easy, but I'd never do 2 hard weeks back to back. And that seems to allow me to get a good consistent block of training, rather than having, you know, high intensity bursts for, you know, a month, and then not being able to train properly for 3 or 4 weeks. You kind of lose all that effect again. Mm. And to help me early on, the first kind of couple of months of training when I start in the winter, I don't allow myself to run faster than 8-minute mile in at any time. Even if I'm going out on, you know, relatively flat terrain, I do not run faster than 8-minute mile in. And that way I can just ease myself into my training. And by the time I finish those 2 months, I'm chomping at the bit, ready to run a little bit faster. Mm. And that's a good feeling. Yeah. And then I can kick on from there.
Maybe you could just tell us, if say a medium or a hard week, just give us an idea of what sort of sessions you'd do in a, so let's say a hard week, if it was your hardest week, but you run 6 times, and what would that entail?
I'd have one long run, which would be say 3 to 4 hours. I'd have a faster kind of 10 mile ish run, approaching tempo, you know, sort of 7.5 minute mile in that kind of pace. Mm. And then I'd probably have some kind of a hill run, whether it's, I call a hill run as going up and down one hill, and I call a mountain session when it's multiple hills. So I'd have one of those kind of sessions in, and then the other kind of 3 I would just be nice steady runs. Those ones I tend to concentrate on trying to be really, really smooth in my running. There was a sort of phrase that sticks in my mind. I think it was in the book Born to Run. I'll stand corrected on that. But they said, somebody was talking about, if you're having to step between a couple of boulders and you can't decide whether to take 1 step or 2 steps, take 3. And I think that kind of rang a note with me, and I try to run as smoothly as I can all of the time, just being a sort of conserving energy, being as economical as I can. And I tend to use those steady runs for that. So even though it's just a steady run, there's still a real purpose to it. And I've quite enjoyed, I've occasionally put a camera down at the side of the trail and just run past it and then have a look later and see what you're running like. I did this a lot when I first started running after my operation to see whether I was hobbling or limping or something like that. And it's quite interesting. I think a lot of people could maybe see what you look like running in difficult terrain, not along a road, but get into proper terrain and see what you look like on a decent trail. So. Yeah.
What about speed work? Do you ever do any sort of really hard fartlek or speed interval sessions?
I haven't for the last couple of years, no. I am lucky in the fact that I've, back when I was younger and fitter and faster, I could run pretty fast on the road. And I don't feel the need to do that now. I'm trying to get my training needs to be more specific to what I'm trying to do. So I have started to do a bit of tempo work, and I know when we were talking earlier tonight, I said that I was going to try and put a few more tempo runs into these remaining weeks before the Lakeland 100. But it's one of the things I heard, listened to a lot of the earlier podcasts, and I know other people have talked about speed work, and it's got me thinking, you know, I'm not stubborn enough to sort of say this is the way it should be done. And so I think next year I probably am going to put a bit more tempo work in. I used to do, you know, half of my training used to be interval training. So I've got that background, and I think I could go to it quite well. And the Keswick Athletics Club do a Tuesday night session and a Thursday night session that is all speed work. So it'd be really easy to slot back into that. But I'm still at the point at the moment where I'm trying to lengthen my runs, and I say go with this smooth style and this kind of stuff. And I don't do any running on the road at all. It's all trails and hills. Obviously, I'm fortunate where I live that I can do that, but it does put a different angle on things. Maybe I'm doing speed work anyway, but the terrain that I'm running in doesn't allow me to have a fast minutes per mile. But the effort I'm putting in may be the equivalent of 6 minute miling. I don't know. But I seem to be getting the results that I want at the moment without having to do that, but time will tell.
Well, it's kickoff, so we're gonna pause here and we're gonna come back. So just before we go on this bit, prediction for tonight: what do you reckon, Chelsea Bayern Munich?
I think, I hope not, but I think Bayern Munich will win 2-0. And John?
Okay, I'm going for 2-1 for Chelsea. Okay, so we'll come back after the football and we'll finish this off. Well, hello again. It's now 10:55 and we've just come down after watching a very, very exciting Chelsea-Bayern Munich game. And what did you predict the score was going to be, David?
2-0 to Bayern Munich.
And what did I predict?
2-1 to Chelsea.
Well, I wasn't quite right in the sense that it went to penalties. Those who are not football fans, then it went to penalties and Chelsea won on penalties. So what we thought we'd do, because it's a bit late and we need to get up early for our run tomorrow, we're just going to look at one more area, thinking about gear. And then I've got the quick-fire questions, which I've been asking people. And then we'll do the other two areas on the run tomorrow. So that's what we've decided to do. So, Dave, tell us a little bit about your gear, because I know that's something that you work hard on with your mountain marathon stuff particularly, and in ultra running. So what are your sort of top tips when you think about what gear you need and what gear you use for ultra running?
The first thing is, do not use anything on the day that you haven't already used. I think I've said that before. Anything could go wrong. You know, it's one of those events where so many things can go wrong. So try and cut out as many of them as you can. And, you know, down to whatever bags you use, whatever food you're trying, whatever drinks you're taking, whatever shoes you're wearing, whatever socks you're wearing, absolutely everything has got to be tried before, you know, on those long runs that you do as part of your training. When I've done both the Fling, the Devil of the Highlands, and the West Highland Way race itself, one of the things that I noticed, and you've mentioned this before, John, is the amount of kit that some people carry. Now, you know, if you're doing a mountain marathon where you have to be self-sufficient for 36 hours, then fine, and you're going to need to carry a rucksack with plenty of kit in it. But when you're doing a race where you can see your support crew, you know, probably longest is probably 2 hours that you'll have to go without seeing them if you wanted to plan it that way. I really don't see why people are carrying rucksacks with, you know, huge bladders full of liquid, two water bottles. You know, if you just start adding up the weight, you know, and equate that to something, you know, it's carrying a small baby on your back or something, then it's going to make a big difference to the amount of energy that you're expending to get through the run. When I did the West Highland Way, I ran with a bum bag, which I actually had fairly compressed down because I only had a pair of gloves, a buff, and a jacket in, and then it's got hip fins. So that, you know, I can put little bits of food and gels or whatever I want in these hip fins, and space for one water bottle that just slots in the side. And that's all I use. And even part of the race, I gave my bum bag to my support crew and just ran with a small bottle in my hand for half an hour, and didn't take anything with me. Obviously, we were lucky the year that I did it when the weather was really nice, and that would change dramatically if the weather turned. The bag that I use, the bum bag that I've got, you can compress in and out. So it could actually, if the weather got really bad, I could carry full waterproofs, a fleece, quite a lot of stuff, and still only have it as a bum bag, and still not need to have a full bladder, a full rucksack. So get away with the lightest you can carry, you think you need, or you can afford. And I think that would make a big difference to a lot of people, the way they're running. Yeah.
Great.
If I could just mention as well, this year we have insisted that everyone carries a space blanket. I think after the fling, when we had a couple of people who fell and hurt themselves and were there for a while, so we are insisting, but they're pretty small, aren't they?
Yeah.
But I would certainly agree with that. I think when you're doing an event, as you say, where the support is there, use it. I'm finding that the difference in training for the Lakeland race, for example, we have to carry a minimum kit there, and it is different, isn't it?
When
you've got a rucksack, yeah.
I think there will be other events out there that people who are planning to do the West Arnold Ray are also going to do. And when you have a look at the different kit requirements for each one, you've got to spend time with that kit in preparation for each individual race. But par it down as much as you can. If the weather conditions allow. If it's looking bad, then you know you've got to make sure you're nice and warm, because you'll perform better when you're nice and warm if the weather turns. But if it's a nice day, go light.
Yeah, great. So as I said, we'll look at the two other areas on the run tomorrow when we have a little hill to walk up or something. And that's thinking about our the nutrition and pace strategy and race strategy. But just to finish this bit before we head off to bed, I've just got a few quick fire questions that I've been asking people. Now, these are particularly for the West Highland Way. So what would you do in these situations? So shoes, road or trail?
Trail. I haven't got any road shoes.
Okay, that's fair enough. Your favourite food to keep you going in a tough time?
An espresso gel.
Okay. Hydration pack or water bottle?
Water bottle every time.
Would you use water or energy drink as your main source?
Energy drink.
Salt tablets?
Yes.
Yep. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you like running with no timepiece?
Garmin. It's just another way of collecting data to analyse.
Yeah. Support crew on the West Highland Way, would you have one or two teams?
I use two.
Two teams.
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite section of the race?
Yeah, the bit from Rowardenham to... from Balmahar to Rowardenham.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I really like that bit. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Do you listen to music or podcasts or books, or do you like just have nothing in your ears?
Nothing at all. Yeah. Enjoy being out there.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite mantra when it's going a bit tough and you need to dig in there?
Yeah, during the Rest on a Ray race, I mentioned earlier that I like to run as smoothly as I can. And I had the song in my head, the Oasis, Roll With It. So I was just singing that for about 3 hours up the side of Loch Lomond. And that seemed to work.
Yeah. Good. What thing do you look forward to most once the race is over?
Sleep.
Okay. And the final one, if you had one tip to give to someone who's doing the West Highland Way race this year, what would it be?
Get on the route beforehand. Make sure you know, not for navigation, but just make sure you know what's coming.
Yeah.
There's a few surprises.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Dave. And as I say, we'll finish off the rest of it tomorrow on our run. So thank you very much so far, and sleep well tonight.
Time for bed.
Yeah. Well, good morning, everybody. It's now 12:05 on Sunday, the 20th of May. We're just climbing out of Coniston. So we've been running for almost 4 hours. And we've had a great run into Coniston, and we've completed the last three legs of the whole route. We started at Ambleside, and then now we're doing the next three legs to Wasdale Head. So we've got a little opportunity to climb out the hill and we thought we'd continue our little podcast. But first of all, Dave, do you want to tell us how it's gone so far this morning?
Well, it's been absolutely glorious. The weather that we've had in Keswick for the last 3 weeks has just been like winter again, running in gloves and hat. And today, I didn't even get my gloves out of the bag. That's how warm it's been. We've even got our sunglasses on, sun hats on. It's like being in Mallorca. And we're going very, very well, moving along very nicely. Still spending plenty of time having a look at the, taking in the views. A ridiculous amount of time filming, but you just have to stop every 3 minutes to take another photograph. Fantastic way to spend the day.
And it's not over yet. We've got another 18 miles, I think, 19 miles. So plenty of enjoyable runs to come. Okay, Dave, so we finished last night talking about two areas that I think you've got a lot to share with us. That was training and gear. So the next area, which I thought it would be good to think about, is nutrition, because that is one that I think, whether you've done ultras for the last 10 years or whether it's your first one, everyone is still a work in progress, aren't they? And I know that you've had quite a lot of thoughts about your nutrition and how to fuel yourself on a 100-mile race. So maybe you could just share a few thoughts about what you feel works for you and some of the principles that you have.
Yeah, sure. I've had a lot of bad experiences in long fell races, even some of the mountain marathons, when I've got fueling completely wrong. And it's ruined the race, and not because of fitness, it was just down to my stomach. Usually things coming back the other way. So I kind of, when I decided I was going to do the West Highland Way, I sat down and did a lot of research. And as I was reading various blogs, various sort of companies' reports about the products that they produce, I started to realise what the mistakes were that I've been making. And the number one mistake tends to be that you put in too much food. You'd be surprised really how little you need when you're doing a long race like that. You might be burning 500 or 600 calories an hour, but you can only replace or assimilate about 250-270 calories an hour. And anything else will just sit in your stomach. So I also had a look at my hydration, trying to avoid cramps, which again I've had real problems with in the past. And I was always thinking, I've got to drink. And again, did the research and realised that I was putting way too much in my body. And I know the West Highland Way, the organisers are very sharp on this, with the weighing that goes along the route, making sure you don't get too heavy, which initially surprised me. But having done the research now, I understand why. Because you're basically diluting the salts in your body, in your muscle cells and so on, and it's a very serious condition leading to coma. So I now work on the principle of round about half a litre of water an hour. I work on trying to do approximately 250-260 calories an hour, and I take salt tablets, which are proper sports enduro-like tablets, which I can adjust depending on how warm it is. I can take them more frequently or less frequently depending on how much I'm sweating. And I haven't had any problems with cramps or stomach issues in any of the ultra races I've done since I changed that plan. I don't take any refined sugars during the race, even though that's what you're craving. You want some chocolate, you want cakes and stuff like that, but I found that I was getting quite a sugar spike. My blood sugar levels would shoot up, I'd get the associated insulin rush, and 20 minutes later I'm actually down with less blood sugar than I started. Just gonna make sure we've got the right way here, John. So So we're over the miners' bridge, and then we're going to hang a right up the path here. Just want to check on that. Pretty sure we go that way. So my big thing was
uphill by river.
Yep. Lead on.
Good.
And despite the fact during the race that my support crew was trying to get me to eat more solid fuel, I was sticking with, I said to them, it's not broke, don't fix it. I know what I'm doing, and I was just using some natural gels. I used some Perpetuum carbohydrate powder mixed with my water, and it worked a treat. And I've just supplemented that with Coke, which I think everybody who does the ultra seems to enjoy that one, although I diluted mine 50-50 with water. This winter I've been experimenting by adding in Iron Brew as another flavour, which I really, really like. And I suppose if you run the West Island Way, you have to have some Iron Brew. And it all seems to be working really well. So underlying principle is perhaps not as much food as you think you'll need. There you go, John.
Great, thanks, Dave. And I think we'll do the last one, which is thinking about race strategy and pace strategy a little bit later on, or maybe when we get home. We're still climbing up. We've just gone past the Miners Bridge, which is the bit that you do on the way down at the end of the race. And now we're sort of we're climbing up. And this leg's about 7 miles, isn't it?
Yeah.
To Seathwaite. Yeah, so we've got a big climb. So I think we'll concentrate on the climb, and we'll come back to the last bit of the podcast later on.
Well, this is the final part of our interview. I think it's been over three, isn't it? We didn't get a chance to do another one on the run this afternoon. We must admit, we had a bit of a tough time after Coniston, after we'd done that podcast. We had a big, big climb. And I think it was psychologically just having finished the race almost, as it were, at Coniston and then starting again. And we both went through a bit of a dip, but got through it. And we ended up in Wastdale Head. It took us just over 9 hours for the 35 and a bit miles. So it was a really, really good day. We've both got bright red faces. We've just had a Chinese takeaway. I had a nice sweet and sour chicken, and yours looked very nice, whatever it was.
Chow mein.
So we're nicely full, and I'm just about to head back to Paisley. A couple of hours in the car, and hopefully my legs won't seize up on the way. But they feel okay, so that should be good. So anyway, before I go, I wanted just to finish off the podcast. And we talked about three areas. We talked about training. We talked about gear. We talked about nutrition on the run. And then the final one I want to ask you, Dave, just a little bit about your pace strategy and how you approach your race. If you want to talk about the rest of the day as well, you can. But maybe talk about the how you approach actually a race day, whether it's the Fling or the West Harlem Way, or as you think about approaching the Lakeland race.
I think all the races that I've done, when I have a look at the splits after, it's quite interesting. I do start very slowly in comparison to all the guys that I end up finishing around. Yeah. And I know there's a number of other philosophies out there. Stuart is the obvious example, that, you know, make as much time as you can while you can run well. But I feel that at the end of the race, I could be doing, you know, if I can run and shuffle along at 10 or 11 minute miling, that's absolutely fantastic, especially if I've gone off too fast and I'm walking at 17 or 18 minute miling, and you can make up far more time. Mm. So, you know, for example, last week, a few weeks ago in the Fling, I was kind of an hour and 50 to Drimmen, which is still much faster than I've done before, yet I was still a long way back in the field and came through. Mm. And my reasoning is partly because of that, what happens later in the race, and just trying to delay that total fatigue when everything hurts. And it will do, you know, you're running 95 miles, it's going to hurt. If it was easy, everybody would do it. And, you know, we probably wouldn't want to do it. And the longer you can delay that absolute fatigue, and if you can put off having to walking on the downhills, you know, that seems to me criminal to have to do that. Mm. You know, you want to be making use of that making use of gravity, really. And if you can't do that, you're going to be losing a lot of time. And we talked a lot about that today, I think.
Yeah.
And I think today's recce was good for both of us. We talked about this in the car, that maybe the first two recces, we kind of cruised through them and we finished really chipper, thought, wow, what's all the fuss about? Whereas today we had to dig deep, and it's just reminded me, you know, the respect you've got to give a race. And, you know, I've kind of readjusted again how I'm going to start in the Lakeland 100. Mm. And the same theory applies, I think, in the West Island Way. And it certainly did when I did the West Island Way. I remember running in that first kind of eight or 10 miles. And obviously you're all chatting away and everybody's bouncing on it. It's very exciting. And of course, everybody asks, well, what time you're hoping to do. And I was sort of saying, well, you know, I really want to run under 24 hours. I'm sure I can do that. What pace are you doing? And most of the people around me were saying, you know, I want to run 26, 28 hours. And I was the one that was slowing down. I would stop and let them go because I felt I was going too fast. Mm. And it takes a lot of discipline. And for the men out there watching this, it's kind of, you know, put the testosterone and the bravado away. You know, you've heard what, when Debs was interviewed, you know, she said that she's very, very good at that kind of reining it back early on and making the most of it later on. And, you know, she mentioned about the testosterone, and I think it's absolutely right. You've got to be disciplined and look at the bigger picture, not what's happening in the first, 20 miles. It's what happens in the last 20 miles that makes all the difference. Yeah.
It's interesting, in Deb's interview, I don't know whether she's looked back on this, but she said that she can't remember anyone ever overtaking her after about 15, 20 miles or so. Would that be similar for you?
Yeah, definitely. When I did the West Island Way, I hardly anybody overtook me after the first 12 miles. And psychologically, that is so good. Yeah. And Stuart talks a lot about having this race energy from the psychological advantages, and that's, I think, where I get mine from. You know, when you see somebody ahead and it just gives you that little kick, and when you catch them, it's fantastic. And you can, you know, obviously you chivvy them on and you have a bit of a crack and that, but when you deep down you're thinking, God, I'm in better nick than you. And you kind of feed off that, and that's particularly later on, that's really important. I remember going past somebody climbing out of Kinloch Leven, who was just sitting on that long climb up, who was just sitting on the side. And, you know, we stopped and had a quick chat, and he said he's fine, he just needed a bit of time to regroup. But when I left him, I thought, oh God, yeah, I'm feeling so much better than that.
Yeah.
And you can feed off that. So I think, yeah, that's really important.
Yeah. Great, well, thank you very much, Dave. Hope you've enjoyed doing this. He says to me he doesn't want to listen to himself, but I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll listen back. But it's been really helpful today, and over the last 2 days, and I'm sure there's lots of great tips in there. We've talked about these podcasts, and if you can just take out one or two things from each interview that are going to help you, then I think that will really help folks. And I would say there's a number of things there that we've talked about that hopefully people will be able to say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and try it out. And that's true of all these things, isn't it? There's no right answer for any of it, in a sense, but it's picking out bits which you think will work for you and then trying it out.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I remember when you asked me to write for the West Island Way website about training,
yeah,
and the first thing I said was that you can read this, you can ignore it all, you can pick out one or two bits, you can adapt the bits. You know, don't assume. I mean, I said this when we were running today, that when I was talking, I felt, God, it sounds like I'm the know-it-all, you know. And I'm not. I've only done the West Island Way race once. I had a good outing, but and I've only done, you know, maybe six or seven ultras. But, you know, if anybody can take one thing, even if it's a mistake or something, and they try it in training and it doesn't work, then it's okay, well, I know not to do it that way, then that's fine. Yeah. But, you know, if you talk to 200 runners on the start line about how they've prepared or what they're going to do in the race, you'll get 200 answers.
Mm.
And I think, you know, pick and choose and see what works.
Yeah. I think, though, I know you've only done, what, seven or eight ultras, but your experience of your orienteering, your hill running, your mountain marathon stuff, you've built up a lot of experience over that time as well, which I think is all pretty relevant. Well, again, thank you very much. And our next recce run is in 4 weeks' time, where we're going to do We've only got one section that we've not done, Westdale Head to Buttermere. So we're going to do that and then carry on and do Buttermere to Keswick again, because that will be in the dark. So we think that would be important to just do that as the last run before the race. Not in the snow. Yeah, but we've done very well, haven't we? The first day we had snow to start and hail to finish, but quite a good day in between. But the last two runs have just been, you couldn't have asked for better weather. Glorious sunshine, clear blue skies. So yeah, a day like that on the race day would suit us down the ground.
Yeah.
So thanks again, and thanks for your hospitality, and I'll see you in a few weeks' time. Thank you very much for listening to the 18th episode of the West Highland Way Race podcast. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that there's a lot of information there from Dave that you can take away. And as we finished the interview, we were just talking about the value of these podcasts and blogs and other things, and not taking everything on board, but picking out different things. And hopefully there's a few ideas in there, or even one idea that you can take out, and it can make a difference to your running. I wish everyone well who's training for the West Highland Way Race, and whether it's your first or many time, the key thing between now and the race is making sure that you don't do anything silly and get there feeling as fit and as healthy as you can, ready to start that line like a caged tiger, ready to go. And remember, slow and steady wins the race. Just touch your limits.